Hello and welcome to the second episode of Putting Science on the Map with me, Kirsty Thompson. Today, we welcome our first guest, Ian Lake, to talk all things environmental epidemiology.
Hi there, Kirsty.
Hi, Ian. Can you introduce yourself just quickly for everyone listening to the podcast? Who are you and what do you do?
Okay, so I'm Ian Lake from School of Environmental Sciences at UEA, and my job title is that I am a professor of environmental epidemiology. Very long words, and I often stutter over epidemiology because it is such a complex word. But basically, I try and understand the role that the environment has in human disease. Why is it when it's cooler, we get more incidence of flu? Or why is it we get more, let's say, allergic disease in the summer? So things such as that.
Perfect. Can you tell me how you've used maps in your work? Obviously, this podcast is very, very much focused on the maps. So that's okay. Kind of what I wanted you to talk about. So yeah, how do maps play a part in what you do?
So my background is in GIS, and one of the outputs of GIS is very much creating maps. So a lot of the work that I do, I guess, uses maps behind the scenes to, for example, link where someone is getting ill to, for example, the weather, the temperature, the rainfall, the agricultural conditions where they live. So maps are very much behind the scenes used to link where someone is getting ill with what they are exposed to. Maps are then also very important in terms of actually communicating that information. But I say very important, and I say that with a little bit of a caveat, because sometimes my work will have lots of GIS analysis that intrinsically uses maps, but we might not actually use a map in the actual output. So the map is very much used to link things together, but the map might not be in the output. And sometimes I think that's a positive thing, because one of my, I guess, bugbears about maps is that maps are an incredibly powerful visual tool. And what it means is that you have to be very careful when using maps. Sometimes you produce a map and people go, oh, wow, that's amazing. And all the academic integrity behind that map is sometimes people forget. So if I just gave you a number, you might say, well, where's that number come from? How confident can we be in that map? You would ask lots of intelligent questions around that number. Sometimes people look at a map and they're also like, oh, wow, it's a map. It's great. So sometimes I don't use maps because I think maps can almost be too powerful, and sometimes people can sometimes lose their senses because it's so visual.
Yeah, do you think though it's possibly quite an important tool for anyone who isn't particularly science-based? Maybe that information can be better expressed in a map than giving them the numbers can.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I just think whatever number you present, whatever map you present, you have to always very careful about thinking about how that's interpreted. And I guess the quote I always use, and if you did GIS, you'll remember this, is someone called Marc Monmonier, who's written a lot of books critiquing maps. And he says maps can mislead in thousands of ways. So they are very powerful, but you have to be very careful with that power.
Absolutely. It's the same as statistics, isn't it? Where you can choose the right statistics to support.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think even more so when it comes to maps.
Perfect. So obviously I have a fairly in-depth understanding of GIS, but we might have some people listening who don't have a clue what GIS is. Do you mind just briefly kind of explaining what it is, what it does?
Okay. So I won't give a formal definition, but the best way to think about a GIS is essentially computer software that within it has a series of electronic maps. And what that allows you to do is integrate those maps together, integrate the data together. So, for example, you might have one map that shows you where someone is getting ill. You might have another map that tells you what the land use is in your study area. And a GIS allows you to link those two together to say, for example, what is the land use around where that person is getting ill? And maps are then one very powerful output of the GIS process. But for me, GIS is all about a tool to analyse spatial data, to analyse maps together.
Absolutely, yeah. It's got some really, really powerful analysis tools, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
So you've kind of briefly described some areas of your work. Are there any other pieces of work that you're aware of that are particularly interesting? Anything that you want to highlight? Anything historical or more up to date? Just anything that you find interesting at all?
I guess because I do health and because I do GIS, I guess I love maps. I love maps of anything to do with health. And I guess thinking about the questions you asked, I was thinking about the Jon Snow example. And I think the thing I'd want to highlight is that map makers have been mapping disease for hundreds of years, for many years before on Jon Snow's map. And I always found those maps fascinating. I think the key thing to pick out about Jon Snow wasn't his map. There were lots of other maps. But the fact that he used that map to then analyse the patterns and link that through to the water supply. So it wasn't the map in Jon Snow's work that was particularly powerful. It was the fact he used it to then integrate in other data sets.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I obviously know not loads about the Jon Snow map, but I know who Jon Snow is. I know what his work was. But again, could you give a little bit of an example of what that piece of work was, just for anyone who might not already know?
Okay, so Jon Snow was a 19th century physician who was very interested in human disease and understanding human disease. And around that time, thousands of people were dying across, especially the UK, due to a disease such as cholera. And the prevailing wisdom at the time was that cholera was due to effectively bad air, that it was something in the air that was making you feel unwell and ultimately getting cholera and dying. And Jon Snow didn't believe this. So what he did is there was an outbreak. By an outbreak, we mean an increase in the cases of cholera in an area around Soho in London. And so what Jon Snow did is he actually created a map of the area and basically numbered every single house where there was a cholera case and every single house where there wasn't a cholera case. What he then did is on that map, he then highlighted the location of the water pump where people were getting their water from. And he also highlighted other water sources. And what he found is that all the households who had cholera were all getting their water from that one individual pump. And interestingly, for a scientific examination, he also found some unusual things in his data that he was able to explain. For example, there was a lady up on Hampstead Heath, so many, many miles away from Soho, who also got cholera. And that was explained by the fact that she liked the taste of the water from this particular well in Soho. So her family would actually take the water from this well and actually carry it up to her in Hampstead Heath for her to drink. And there was also another example of within the Soho area, there was a small brewery. And within that brewery, none of the workers in that area were getting cholera. And that's because they had their own separate well. So putting all those pieces of evidence together, he was able to demonstrate quite conclusively that it was this specific well that was leading to people developing cholera, and hence cholera was waterborne. If you're ever interested in Man in London, there's actually a Jon Snow pub at the exact site within Soho. And there's actually, I think, a plaque on the pavement at the exact site where the original pump was.
Amazing. That's really, really interesting. Thank you. Obviously, the main topic within health at the moment is COVID. Are you aware of any map-related COVID work that's been quite helpful or quite interesting?
I'd like to give two examples. I guess the first example would be the Johns Hopkins University site that takes all the COVID data that's coming from individual countries around the world and plots that on a map in near real time with, for example, only a delay of about one day. And I think that's been an incredibly powerful website to demonstrate to people across the globe the spread of COVID and also how that spread is changing over time. So that's one example that I would use. Another example I would like to give, and it's one, I guess, a shameless self-promotion, is one by one of my PhD students who currently works for Public Health England. And what he's doing is using a spatial analysis technique called kernel density estimation. Quite a complex word, but essentially what he's doing is he's mapping COVID cases across the UK every single day to looking at areas where they're building up, areas where they're declining, And he's doing that at the moment for all COVID cases, but also doing that on a daily basis for all the variants of concern. So every day his maps have been looked at and people were able to say, okay, it looks as, for example, if the Indian variant seems to be increasing in this area, or the South African variant is now decreasing in this area. So I think a really powerful example of how a map derived from a GIS is having a real impact in terms of, I guess, driving public health interventions to COVID at the moment.
Amazing. Are there any other map-related projects that you're either working on at the moment or you'd like to work on in the future that you'd like to mention?
I've worked on lots of projects that have had maps as output. So we've done work trying to map how dengue fever might change in Central and South America due to climate change. I've also done projects looking at how allergic disease related to pollen might change, for example, across Europe due to climate change. So happy to cite those two examples.
Perfect. Now, this podcast, in a way, is also aimed at people who might be early on in their career or starting to think about where they might like to go with their career. What advice would you give for people who have found this interesting, find the whole topic interesting, and might like to go down a similar route?
I guess I would give a couple of things, I guess, that have inspired me, but also areas of advice. Again, one is obviously you need to be good academically. So if you want to get involved in public health, if you want to get involved in sort of mapping, you need to be good academically. I think the second side of that, and it's a little bit more tricky side, is you also need to be a person that other people get on with. All academic work, public health work, is all about different teams working together. And I think the ideal person for a team that you want to bring on with your team is someone who's academically really good, who's going to do the work well, but also someone who you're going to be able to get on with. So I think those two are really important. I would also say work experience is really important, and also taking opportunities when they arise. You know, I think back to my career, to lots of little opportunities that have arisen that I've taken that have actually turned into other things. So take those opportunities when they arise.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much. It's been lovely having you, and I'm sure everyone will love hearing what you've had to say.
Okay, good. Thank you, Kirsty.
Well, we've come to the end of today's episode. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. Another episode will be out next week, where I'll be talking more maps with another great guest. Remember, if you have any comments, questions, or think you'd make a good guest, you can contact me by emailing scienceonthemap@gmail.com. Bye!